I digress for one moment. There's been a reference to the No Fault Act. The No Fault Act is wholly irrelevant to what we're facing here. The No Fault Act dealt with first party benefits for medical benefits, rehab, wage loss, etc. The No Fault Act really doesn't address liability insurance other than indicating that you have to have it. So that No Fault Act has no application whatsoever to the issues currently before the court. Now, once the trial court granted summary judgment, there was then a Rule 59 motion filed where for the first time an affidavit of Ms. King was attached purporting to indicate, gee, I thought I had full coverage and I never would have bought a policy if I didn't think everybody would be covered. The trial court denied that motion. Then we come up on appeal, and if you look at the opening brief, there are in essence two or three arguments. The first is that Meyer is controlling, and we acknowledge that that issue was raised and properly preserved below. The second is an argument based on the reasonable expectations of Ms. King, the insured. And the third is an argument that the that the household exclusion violates public policy as being contrary to the compulsory insurance laws. Let's address the last two. Those were never raised in any appropriate manner in the trial court. The reasonable expectations doctrine was never raised before the trial court. There were no cases concerning the reasonable expectations document that were cited to the trial court. Similarly, the breach of public policy by the exclusion being in violation of compulsory liability insurance, that was never really raised before the trial court with a cogent argument. Accordingly, our position is that neither of those issues are appropriately before the court. One other point before I get to the merits.
Okay, go ahead and finish your point.
Thank you. And that is when, and part of the reason that I requested oral argument was when you get to the reply brief, there are assertions without citation to the record that indicate that the Kings never got a copy of the policy and that indicate that at no time did the agent or any other agent of Allstate, either in writing or by oral communication, inform King that the mother was not covered. There's no evidence in the record of that. There's no citation to that. And secondly, that was never raised at the time of responding to our summary judgment motion. It's too late. You have a question?
Sure, Mr. Gregory. On the applicability or not of the ruling in Meyer, I'm curious about the effective date of the insurance policy that was in effect at the time of the accident here. Can you tell me about that?
Yes. The policy, I'm kind of shooting from the hip a little bit. The policy is either written on a six-month basis or a yearly basis, and it's renewed either every 6 months or yearly.
And the policy attached to the motion for summary judgment would answer these questions?
Yes, that's correct. And so when the policy is renewed at the renewal period, be it 6 months or a year. So the statute 10-4-4182B was enacted in 1986. And of course here the accident took place, you know, in the 2010 time frame or what have you. So, you know, by that point, the statute was clearly effective as validating the household exclusion contained in the Allstate policy.
And obviously the insurance policy was renewed after that point, after Meyer.
Yes, I mean, assuming and accepting the argument that it was first written in 65, it had been renewed repeatedly up through the date of the accident.
Thank you.
So if we then go to the one substantive argument which is before the court, it's whether Meyer, in fact, invalidates household exclusions. The answer is Yes, it did. But the point is that subsequent to Meyer, we had the General Assembly enacting 10-4-418, and we've had multiple decisions from both this court and the Supreme Court upholding the validity of household exclusions in policies. Admittedly, the cases do draw a distinction where you have, like for example in Dotson, where you have an insured versus insured exclusion, and the Supreme Court in Dotson said that particular statute, 10-4-418, was very narrow in drawing the line as to what exclusion is appropriate. But household exclusion, and that was the basis for the denial of coverage here, has been upheld by the Supreme Court as sanctioned by the General Assembly. If there are no further questions, Allstate would request that the judgment be affirmed and that Allstate be awarded appropriate relief under Rule 38.
Thank you, Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Judge.
Again, if it pleases the court. First of all, I would like to go back to the motion that we filed under the Rule 59 proceeding. And on page 2 of that particular motion, we made clear that the issues of material fact and extrinsic circumstances in the case go to the issue of coverage. And we raised the reasonable expectations of the parties at that point. We also attached...
But Ms. Warburg, wasn't that too late to raise it? Shouldn't that have been raised in response to the motion for summary judgment?
No, I don't believe so, because we also then attached the affidavit of Martha King as well. The trial judge could very well have said, all right, I'm going to give you your day in court. Could have set aside the motion for summary judgment, and it reinstituted the two-hour window that had been granted to us for that hearing. We never got that. I would have to say that where we are today is the fact that this is a situation where things are not black and white, the policy or not, as Judge Williams looked at that. This is a real viable emotional situation where we have a bad automobile accident case. There's coverage for Cecil to have received a coverage under the policy. Mrs. King received coverage under the policy for her medical care and treatment, but the wrongful death claim was denied. I surmise, and what I want to point out to the court, that Meyer, Dotson, and Kaufman clearly make the exclusionary clause invalid. Now, when you move forward with that, you go back to the reasonable expectations in this case. And the court can always notice error in a case. I've had that many times raised by an appellate court that they notice something that counsel doesn't notice or one side or the other doesn't notice. It is clear that the insurance company, Allstate Insurance Company, did not adequately inform their insurer that exclusion was in full force in effect and would exclude any kind of coverage for the mother that resided with them on Terry Road. I submit that is incredible to think that they would say, no problem with that, we'll continue to pay our policy, it's fine with us. There would have been that expectation. We always had Allstate, we always followed the law, we always had that coverage, and there was insurance coverage. So based upon that, our opening brief, particularly our reply brief, that goes to those issues, we believe that there should be coverage for Martha B. Schramm as a result of this automobile accident. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Warburg. Thank you again, Mr. Gregory. We appreciate both of your arguments this afternoon. The case stands submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.